Hey guys, this is Lawrence with a quick introduction. I'm just apologizing and holding myself accountable. I commit a fairly egregious fuck-up in this episode and get the opening of Wishmaster wrong. Having studied it at some length, I believe it is saying that angels, humans, and djinn were created all at the same time, or possibly that it goes angels, humans, then djinn. The order I say in this episode is entirely erroneous, and I apologize.
My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
Okay, welcome to an especially accursed episode of Bad Time Radio. We're talking about Hypnotized, an episode of the CBS radio... No, fuck. of Nightfall that aired on April 22nd, 1983. I'll talk about Nightfall later. For now, I'm going to summarize this fucking episode. Ronald, give me a timer anyways, just, you know, for funsies. Let's see if I can get it down.
I got you.
3, 2, 1. I'm going. So we open on a woman. She is being subjected to an experiment by sinister government forces. We never really figure out what. The experiment is that they're going to regress her back in time or through her past lives so they could figure out where the devil came from. Her old doctor is leaving because they kept having this weird thing where they'd hypnotize her and then they'd start sharing bodies and he doesn't want to share her body. A new doctor, Dr. Ravage, comes in. He regresses her back into her past life after trying to talk to her that hypnosis is good and she's just got a stupid mental block. The past life is her as a monk. She murders another monk who's got the plague. And then she gets the plague, so they lock her in a room while she rots and dies of the plague. And then suddenly she starts getting super cold. Her vitals crash. Everyone's all like, oh my God, what's happening? It turns out that the other doctor that she had the psychic link with has died in the mountains, and therefore she died as well. And we never find out where Satan came from, and it's all quite gaffy. So there, that's it. That's all that happens. Oh, and at one point they're like, why can't you sleep? And she's like, I'll fall inside my spine. And then she says that there's a wind howling out of her spine because apparently she's like, yeah, she's like having premonitions of her death, of the other guy's death. And also wind howling out of my spine sounds a lot like farts. Huh. So anyways.
Did your farts come out of your spine, Lawrence?
My spine down at the bottom.
Like the coccyx?
Your titty bone?
Yeah. I mean, that's all part of the, I used to know all of, like, the anatomical terms for that. Anyway, it's the end point of your notochord, which is...
what's hilarious?
Notochord.
Yeah. Dan's audio quality is now perfect.
Sound amazing now.
All it required was the blood sacrifice of three tries at recording this.
Yeah, we lost 20 minutes.
Well, you know what? See, all these other guys think you didn't sound amazing before. I think you sounded amazing before, Dan. Don't listen to
me. Your ideas were strong. Your audio quality, not so much. So, anyways, let's go around and would you recommend this? I'm going to go first because fuck it. I think that this is an incredible episode of radio. It has a very uncanny quality because the sound quality is so poor. The audio engineering is amazing. The acting is pretty good. And the things that happen in it don't really connect to one another in a way that is very eerie and upsetting making as opposed to like very, you know, annoying. So it was creeping me out this morning when I was out walking my dog. And that's all you really want from horror. So I got to recommend it. Give this thing a listen, I say. Ronald, what do you think?
I actually think this is like probably the best one we've listened to so far. I was listening to this while I was watching Eddie Murphy's music video. It synced really well.
Wait, what?
Now I have to ask Ronald, which music video was it? Was it for My Girl Likes to Party All the Time, or was it for his duet with Michael Jackson, What's Up With You?
It's gotta be, I'm glad you know both, but it's gotta be Party All the Time.
I was gonna try to picture it might be the Shrek soundtrack. He probably recorded something for it. I haven't seen the later Shrek sequels, but you know there's gotta be a scene where Donkey raps. It's just, it has to have happened.
I mean, it has to, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the first two, I think.
Yeah, I think we might have actually seen the second one together on that like real bad thing that I thought was a double date and the girls did not think was a double date.
That was me.
Ah, well, that was bad.
Well, this is a This is a really great episode of Shrekcast, guys, but I haven't seen them, so I don't know.
I don't want to spoil anything.
Whoa, don't spoil anything.
Yeah, the part where Shrek puts on his master suit armor. I mean, shit, sorry.
The part where it turns out that Pinocchio is a crossdresser. Hilarious.
Oh, my goodness.
That might actually be in there.
It is.
I don't remember, but it's the same
thing. Sounds plausible.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's wearing women's underwear. As the gingerbread man notes, it's a thong. This is, anyways, Dan, Ronald, you fucking liar. You hate it.
What do you mean, dude? The listeners, I've spoken to the listeners my truth.
Okay, fine. Ronald loves it because this 30-minute podcast somehow sticks with a 3-minute music video. Great. Rahul, what did you think?
Voice acting good. Otherwise, I don't recommend it.
Dan, what'd you make of it?
Yeah, I always find the paranormal in a laboratory setting compelling. I love that setup. It's one of my favorite tropes. Sorry to use the T word, fellas, but it is a trope. And I found the performances affecting. There were some real creepy moments. Honestly, that the thing about the spine I thought was really creepy. That was a little out of nowhere. I really liked it. So I think the overall effect was effective. Boy, my perspicacity is failing me. So I would recommend it. But with understanding our other interlocutors' misgivings.
Yeah. And okay, let's go through. And I already summarized. We already did the recommendation. I got the order wrong. It doesn't fucking matter anymore. But let's get into some high points. What do you guys think?
Let's do it.
So first off, I think that the sound engineering on this is really good. There's a very long sequence where she's being hypnotically regressed, and in the background, there is the beeping of a heart monitor, and then they lay over that medieval-like sound effects of the monastery she's in from the monk thing. And I thought that they did a good job of laying on just enough sound effects to suggest stuff, although there is one thing where they play the stereotypical monk sound that I thought I would have pulled that one, but the other ones are very good. And it's just creepy as shit because you got the beeping, you got all the, you know, her talking about rotting. It is excellent. Anyone else got a high point? And if you're like, the sound quality on this sucks, yeah, that's fair because, you know, these are very old recordings and the sound quality on them. No one's bothered to do a pass on this because this is kind of the redheaded stepchild of the old time radio family and no one's really bothered to remaster
them. Yeah.
We're rushing through these, listeners, because we already recorded all of this part and it feels a little unnatural to repeat the same thing over. But I will just say my previous point that was unrecorded is that the sound engineering is really good, but the quality is so low that it's like really kind of hard to understand what's going on. And I think that kind of hard to appreciate. Yeah. It just makes it harder to I had a hard time focusing on the episode because it was so it's kind of garbled.
Yeah, I think a high point, rather similar to like I guess another a cool engineering moment like Lawrence was talking about was so the whole radio play opens with the ostensible, you know, audio recordings, you know, audio notes from one of the psychologists involved in the experiment, and when he talks about how the person they're hypnotizing and she starts having like clairvoyance and clairaudial experiences, and it feels like she's starting to enter his mind and he's starting to enter her mind. They actually layer very low woman's voice saying those same lines as he's speaking them. That was really super cool. I thought that was really neat.
Then later on when she's dying, they do something similar. I think it's the psychiatrist voice when, she's talking about where she is and what's happening to her as she's passing on. They keep asking her, where are you? And she's like, nowhere. What's your name? I don't have one anymore. Which kind of raises questions about what the fuck's going on with this. There's past lives, but also when you die, you apparently go to oblivion, ? Oh, and also they think Lucifer's running around. So the backstory, building here is weird, but they're laying in an inhuman voice when she's speaking. And normally that would be kind of cheesy because I've heard so many possession narratives, but the voice they chose combined with the low audio quality instead rendered it extremely uncanny.
Yeah, it really did almost feel like a with that low audio quality, it did feel like a transmission coming through a veil that you weren't supposed to hear.
Yeah. Mm. And that combined with the fact that the script doesn't really follow like normal rules for how a script is supposed to work, because there's like enormous no. loose ends and stuff. I said this when we were on the last recording. I think that this, like, it is much more upsetting because it doesn't play by the rules, which creates like a sense of unsafety in the listener than like the normal radio play where you can guess what's going to happen next because you've heard like a million of them. Well, I have. You guys have.
We've gotten to a point where I've heard a decent amount. Not nearly as many as you, but...
Fair enough. But like, if I had played you like the opening 5 minutes of this, I don't think you could have guessed what was going to happen in it. Which
no, I thought for sure we were going to get some sort of Lucifer action, given how much they stressed that. But alas and alack. Although maybe, hey, and that's all part of the... Hey, that's science. You know, you have a hypothesis and you go out there and you test it, and sometimes you get a null result, but that's just as valuable for building basically a body of scientific knowledge.
And what they were doing was definitely good science.
It was 100% great science. Convincing a traumatized woman to keep going.
I thought she was going to come, like, she was going to, like, suck the devil into her and slaughter everyone around her. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Or one of her past lives, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, that brings me to another high point, if you guys will. Also, these scientists, you're being shitty about their science, Ronald, but they have proven, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that reincarnation is real, and that's pretty incredible.
Have they proven that? Or have they just gotten some sleep-deprived, drugged-up lady to say that there is, that she's part of a past life or
okay,
whatever?
How's this? They proved some, I don't know if they proved anything, but they definitely found a strong thing that needs to be investigated further in the whole she died at the same time as a psychiatrist thing.
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think definitely by the standards of 70s, 80s parapsychology, this is a rock solid result.
They both died like at the same time.
I agree.
Maybe. Actually
if you read up on the actual attempts at uncovering or discovering the nature of or the mechanisms behind ESP that were done in an attempt at a scientific investigation of this phenomenon in the 70s, which was all over the place. It was huge. I mean, it was definitely all over the popular culture, but there were actual, like, you know, Harvard psychologists looking into this stuff. There's a reason why we don't have a cadre of psychic warriors for the CIA. It's because it did not ever result in anything.
Oh, like
I watched the Ministeric Goats. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Everyone was actually psychic. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure George Clooney is actually psychic.
He's the guy from the movie.
That was a twist, right? Yeah. That it was George.
It was his autobiography. Anyways, guys, check this out: the men who stare at Goatsy.
Oh God!
It's the porn.
That's just normal guys.
Oh God!
that's just called being online in 2002.
Man. Yeah,
that's not a very interesting movie. Yeah.
Okay, so I have a serious question. Why was the woman sick and dying when she came in? What was the?
Well, no, she was sick and dying because of all the hypnosis they did on her. They hypnotized her too much.
Yeah. So the German doctor sounding guy explained it like she had. It's unclear how she was identified as a test subject, but maybe it was just like, she's just like randomly answered a flyer, be like, hey, earn $150 by being tortured in hell. It was a subconscious reaction to get them to stop. Her body was shutting down in order to stop them from uncovering what they needed to uncover, which was the origin of Satan.
And the other guy thought that it was just from overuse. Also, so I have a very serious, not at all ironic high point, which is that I know you guys are talking a lot of shit about Dr. Ravage and Dr. Lasky, but they have an admirable commitment to the scientific method and to science. And I'm going to just list the things that happened and they just blew past and did not stop the experiment for.
Okay. So
first of all, they had a woman, unclear where they got her, and also unclear what, like, they're working for something called the Institute. And apparently not everyone at the Institute is on board, because at one point he makes a note that they need to transcribe this and hide it somewhere so that, you know, non-sympathetic eyes won't see it.
But anyway, so they've been hypnotizing her for a while. And now whenever they hypnotize her, there's an uncontrollable discharge of bile and phlegm from her. Shit moves around her. She can apparently, she's clairaudient, and they never really explain what the fuck that is. She and the doctor start switching places inside their minds. And the response to all of this is just the doctor should go take a vacation, but they shouldn't stop. Oh, she's lost 40 pounds and her hair, which they claim is psychosomatic.
Right. And her, and she has like bleeding. She's just bleeding out
some
of her skin.
Gums. And
well, we'll get to that. Then she asks repeatedly to stop, and they say, you've signed a contract, therefore you can't stop. And also at one point she's like, I'd like to stop. Please put me in a nursing home so I can recover. And the guy goes, the psychic testimony you've given already is too important.
Yeah.
And then later on, I guess what they, this one, she dies too quick to see if they would have stopped or not, but it certainly didn't seem like they were going to. She, her body contorts in such a way that a nurse thinks that her back is broken, and she starts bleeding out of her eyes and mouth, and her pulse flatlines, and her temperature drops to the 80s. And still they persist until eventually Dr. Ravitch is like, okay, fine, I'll try CPR. And note this down as hysterical psychosomatic heart failure? Question mark. I guess to cover his ass.
which I do love that, like, you know, like I'd imagine like the bean counters in the hospital administration are looking over, like, you know, like the records. They're like, okay, something unusual. Oh, psychosomatic heart seizure.
and it somehow also broke her back, which I think if you're at the point where you're breaking your back, it ain't psychosomatic anymore.
Right. That's very somatic.
Yeah. That's tetanus.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But they had to press on because they were going to finally get some eyewitness testimony about the creation of Satan, because apparently souls precede Satan. Not sure about that.
God, I don't getting any evidence on that one.
Yeah. God might have made them all at the same time. I don't know. I think.
Well, see, that would be if you're gonna go with the. We were talking about this on one of the one of the mysterious lost episodes that we recorded already about this episode of the radio. But that was kind of, we were talking a little bit about that. That, like, so they're kind of delving into, they're making a theological claim that, okay, souls reincarnate, so we have past lives. Souls pre-exist any given life, sure, but they seem to be staking out a claim that. Not only do souls pre-exist the existence of humans, but they also pre-exist the existence of the angels. Because if I recall my sort of, you know, Christianity expanded universe correctly, the angels were created before human beings. But the souls that were going to go in human beings are evidently assumed by this scientific team to precede the angels being created, because then otherwise, how would they be there to watch Lucifer have his origin?
Or right? At the very least, they were all created at the same time.
Right. Or they were created at the same time so that there's a, you know, the popping into existence. They're all right there. You know, really, like, it's kind of the parapsychological, theological version of the Big Bang background radiation that the Super Whamadyne observatories can see, you know?
Yeah.
How about that?
What's the theological debate on that?
On the Big Bang?
That's a good question.
On the background radiation, I mean.
Oh. On the background radiation? Yeah. As I understand it, I think if I recall correctly, I think the Jesuits have probably the most sophisticated integration of cosmology with Christian theology, and that's probably just because they're a bunch of big old nerds who have been, you know, embarking on that kind of project for centuries. I couldn't tell you how much water it holds with everybody, but that's a very good question. I don't know.
From what I understand, the general Christian, first of all, if you're a Catholic or a mainline Protestant, you just go, the Big Bang happened, but God made it happen and it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, sort of guided evolution, the guided creation.
Yeah, and then you just kind of wonder why God let all those animals to, whatever, you move on, you know. He works in serious ways. It's fine. Whatever. But if you're a hardcore Christian, you end up with a lot of weird shit where maybe the Big Bang happened, but God did it. But also it happened much sooner than you think it did, depending on what kind of creationist you are.
Yes.
And among other things, the speed of light has changed a lot, which...
That's my favorite one.
Yeah. Because it has to have. Because if you have like a...
one of those, whatchamacallit, an astrolabe or one of those angle measuring things that lets you see the angle a star is at, and you take a measurement of a star from like a couple of miles away, you can do elementary trig to prove that the thing is, you know, millions and millions and millions of miles away, which means that if the Earth was only created 6,000 years ago, you straight up couldn't see it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So fascinating. well, to me, I used to be very.
Well, everyone knows that it's a flat Earth and all the stars are fake.
Yeah, it's the devil trying to trick us. It's fun.
That's exactly it. Yes,
I don't know why we're even bothering with this.
That's why it's so important that we torture ladies to find out where he started.
Yeah, so we can see through his tricks.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, I have consulted the ultimate Christian text, which is, of course, the opening scroll of Wishmaster. And you are correct. Mm. The angels were created. I'm checking it, and I believe they were created after the jinn, but before the humans. So,
yeah. And so that's an inversion of the traditional Islamic understanding, because I believe that tradition holds that the angels were created first, and then the jinn, and then and then mankind, which is one of the reasons why jinn are so mischievous, is because they're a bit jealous of God's favoritism on humankind, even though they're the youngest of the three classes of beings.
And that's why they'll never grant you a straight up wish, bastard.
That's right.
Can angels grant wishes?
Yes. Sure.
Sure. Why not?
I'm consulting the monster.
I mean, why
manual.
Do jinn have the power to grant wishes but not angels?
When angels grant them, they're called blessings.
Yeah, or they're answering your prayers, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, in Christian, the one thing I always, okay, I know this is getting really off.
Whatever, dude, it doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. We're all punchy.
In Christian theology, are demons all fallen angels, or what's up with that? Where do they come from?
Typically, yes, but that's a bit complicated because that is what amounts to, well, that's Christianity extended universe.
Right.
Sure. That's not explicitly stated anywhere in any of the scriptures. That is a kind of
like a
reasoning.
Medieval.
Yeah. Or it's really, I want to say there is like an antecedent in the Jewish tradition. Like this was part of kind of an inheritance from Judaism in that kind of conception, but that would have been in kind of that would not have been an element in any of the Torah scriptures, but rather kind of the elaborations on the Torah and religious conceptions that, of course, the Jewish people being a very literate people, there were, of course, there's a lot of scholarship. There's a lot of teasing out of loose ends that goes on. But it all amounts to, I guess, what I would call mythology, because it's not anything you can. And honestly, that's a bit what you can say about the doctrine of the Trinity, that is not something that's laid out. At no point does Jesus say, all right, get this, guys. I'm God, but so is God, and so is the Holy Spirit.
And I know you think that means that we're like the same thing, but we're not.
But we're not.
And if you say, in fact, if you say it is, I mean, now it's fine, but in a couple hundred years, people might actually like beat you for saying
that. You would be, yeah, you could be in trouble for that. So I think it amounts to a kind of squaring a circle where you have a number of statements that are contradictory in the scriptures that are harmonized by this invention of a doctrine. In the case of the Trinity, well, you're harmonizing, you know, statements that Jesus made in one gospel where he says, I am God, and in another one where he says the Holy Spirit did this or that or whatever. And so you come up with a kind of way to fit that all together. So that's kind of my typical understanding of demons in the traditional Christian sense, is that they are understood to be the angels who followed Lucifer in his rebellion. They're typically numbered at one third of the heavenly host. One third goes into rebellion, and they are the demons. What's really fun is that very early on in Christianity, you got they hit upon the cheat code of like the fact that, well, most people around the Mediterranean, you know, they made their sacrifices to their gods, and then the rains came. So it's like, okay, well, we know these gods are real, and the Christians were just like, oh yeah, they're real. They're just demons. They've been tricking you.
They're
fallen angels.
Yeah.
Which I always thought like, that's pretty clever.
Worship, no, it's fine. You can worship your little demon. You'll go to hell eventually.
Like, sure. I mean, that's, you know, if it's worth
that's
it to
you,
you
want,
if you're,
yeah.
You know, if that's
also
what you want, sure.
Also, we'll kill you.
Eventually. I mean, once Constantine does what Constantine does, yeah. But for now, you know, just hell.
Yeah. But anyway, so sadly, our scientists were not able to discover all of that and put it down on a graph.
Yeah.
Because at no point did Lucifer ever appear.
They induced poltergeistism, which on its own seems like it should have revolutionized all science, and they should have just been like, okay, it's fine.
Yeah. We figured some stuff out, guys. Let's like, you know, quit when we're ahead.
We broke the laws of physics. That's enough.
I was going to say, like, we've overturned Newton in our little laboratory, in our little hospital bed. So how about we just kind of chew on that for a while before we make this poor lady freeze herself to death to avoid this?
Newtonian physics might still be applicable. It's just an invisible force that we can't.
Yeah, poltergeistism is invisible billiard balls.
Exactly. Yeah. He just said things have to have a force acted upon him. He didn't say like what the force
was. Yeah, the force could be a demon or whatever the fuck was going on. Yeah. They didn't explain.
God? I don't know.
Maybe it was a monk. ? Yeah, anyways,
it could have been a monk. They didn't bother delving into that part, so it's pretty unrelated to the rest of the story, really.
And yet it was about a third of the story that didn't relate to anything else and was to me the most engaging.
Yeah,
I mean, that was kind of the most interesting hook, but yeah, they didn't go for it. But it's still, hey, you know, I'm sure Lawrence will go to bat and saying that's all part of the creepy, eerie affect.
Look, I'm not sure that it was doing it on purpose, but the fact there's something very disquieting about a narrative that doesn't follow the rules you expect of a narrative, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I get that.
Yeah. Anyways, let's go to some low points, which is, I mean, I can't really stand up for the fact that this story has like a setup and then kind of repeats that setup, but from a different guy, then goes down this weird side path with the monk and then pays off the setup. And it seems like the setup could have been about half the length. And also, I don't know what the monk story meant, you know?
Yeah. What was that related to? Yeah. The first time I listened to it, I was only kind of half paying attention. And I thought that she died from the monk plague, like it killed her in real life. And then
would have made more sense.
Yeah,
I did too. I thought she was experiencing the monk's death.
Yeah, and then she died, and then that killed the doctor. But then when I listened to it again, I was like, oh, actually, he died first, I think, because the cold thing. And also, I guess if she died first, like how would they have been even searching for him that quickly?
So. Yeah, the other thing is that they never actually established that the doctor's dead. Like it seems pretty likely, but it's not like they find his corpse.
That was the weird
was
thing.
Really
and they
weird.
Say,
yeah,
because like, then they say, like, they
we,
say he probably froze
find his
to
body,
death.
But he probably froze to death. I'm like, what?
Like, what?
I mean, it's they place a call for him in the afternoon, and then they hear back in the evening that he's missing and probably frozen to death. Which implies that it's been maybe a day, because it sounds like it's a day hike, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess Switzerland is cold.
That's
yeah,
fair.
I'm sure it was very cold. I doubt it was the middle of the summer when he froze to death.
But a day is still an awful short amount of time to be like, the searchers can't find him.
He could have been in a different village or something.
Like, what if they called back like 5 minutes after the episode ended and were like, oh God, you're going to laugh at this. Guys.
Well, hey, you know, we say this, but you know, it took 5,000 whole years for us to find Ötzi the Iceman in the Alps. So,
fair enough.
You know, yeah.
So in 5,000 more years, when Satan has been not only proven where he came from, but actually brought to Earth and rules over us all, they're gonna find that dude and be like, weird, and then eat him because they're all demons.
Well, we're not gonna have glaciers, so.
Well, we will in this universe because Satan came back.
Oh, yes,
right.
Yeah.
He'll fix it all.
Or
if
not.
If you remember your Dante at the final bottom pit of hell is a frozen lake.
Oh, yeah. What's that for?
It's inertia. It's like Dante is making the point that like, you know, goodness and the love of God is the kind of prime mover, right? It's the vital force behind creation. So what is evil? Evil is the inert. It is the negation. It is stillness. So you have
God,
Satan
I'm
frozen.
Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I was going to say, I feel like you're saying that to me, but you really should be directing it to Ronald.
Hey, do you guys remember like when there was that brief flurry of God of War clones in the 2010s and someone made one of Dante's Inferno?
Yeah,
I do.
I played that game.
Was it any good? It looked bad. It looked
it
very
okay.
bad.
Did you ever rescue Beatrice?
Yeah. I don't fully remember the entire thing, but I remember rescuing Beatrice, I'm pretty sure. I don't think it sticks to the book.
Right. I was gonna say, like, because that does not happen.
Right.
They should make a strategy game out of Paradise Lost. That'd be fun. Huh. Give the demons can have all kinds of gunpowder units and be good at range. The angels can be good in, you know, melee and have miracles. Just, you know, good clean, solid fun.
That does sound like some good stuff.
I guess I should clarify. In Paradise Lost, there's an extended sequence where the demons use their knowledge of chemistry to make guns to try to kill heaven.
Does it work?
No. Damn. Because
too bad, because that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a much, much weirder book than people give it credit for.
All right, I've got another low point.
Fair enough.
You guys ready for this one?
Yeah.
There's a part where the doctor is trying to convince the lady, like, you just need to go into hypnosis and this will fix everything. And she's like, oh, I don't want to. I have horrible dreams. And the guy's like, what are they of? And she's like, horses. And he's like, well, see, that's it right there. It's telling you that you're just afraid of nightmares. Yeah. The horses are mares. And he like repeats it like 5 times. And it's like, yeah. What are you trying to say here?
It's like he's trying to convince this woman that this thing that's making her throw up bile and phlegm uncontrollably is good because of a pun.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, right. It's like, okay, yeah, she's terrified of it. That doesn't explain that it's like a good idea to do, you moron. Like that kind of makes it worse if she's that scared that she's like having pun visions or whatever he's trying to claim.
The other thing, I don't understand why, like, I understand why the first guy is doing it. He's trying to figure out where Satan came from, yeah, as we all do. The second guy appears to be trying to do this as a sort of therapy to her, which does not make sense, yeah, because of all the horrible, horrible things I've listened to.
That is, I mean, I guess I presumed that like he was another guy on the experiment, or maybe he like got tagged in to do this, and like maybe he doesn't know exactly what the, well, no, because he did say like, no, your psychic testimony is too important, we have to keep going. So I think he's plugged in somehow.
He keeps saying that it's all in her head too, though. So it's right. It's like every line they flipped a coin on whether this guy believed in what he was doing or not.
Like, well, I do think if you got to the point where like you're discovering like psychic shit is real, then the whole like, oh, it's all in your head thing is actually, oh, so it's real still.
Yeah.
Because things in my head are real.
Yeah. Clearly you're able to externalize your thoughts.
Right.
But I think I kind of get the impression that this lady wasn't recovering from whatever happened to her. And so that's part of why he maybe was slightly trying to help. It was in a pretty roundabout way.
It did seem like, and with the, you know, with the German accent, you know, it's kind of placing himself kind of squarely in the psychoanalytical realm of psychology, where it is about like, aha, we're going to dig down into your psyche and remove the, you know, the block. It's Scientology almost. We have to cleanse you of the negative thetans.
Except before in this case, get better. It's not that they want to cleanse the thetans. They just want to kind of look at them, find out what Lord Xenu is like,
and write notes on it.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any good low points, or just anything amusing they noticed in the episode?
I don't know. I think it covered everything that really jumped out to me.
Raul, yeah. You got anything?
Well, I just had one thought while you guys all explained what was even happening. Like, even if they had sent her back in time through the, what do they say? That's some term they use.
Hypnotic regression?
Hypnotic regression. Something like that. Like the halls of eternity or something.
Yep, that's the one.
Even if they like went back and like witnessed Satan, like, I just don't.
How would you even describe it?
I don't get like what.
No.
What the purpose is.
The purpose is going to be their paper is going to make the cover of Nature. That's the purpose.
They're going to have
a picture of Satan on the front.
Yeah, they're going to have a weird, very sick woman's sort of vague dream description of a devil.
It's like, who?
It's going to revolutionize fucking science.
Yeah, they didn't even have her like hooked up to a brainograph or something that was like, allowing her to visualize. Right. Nothing like that even. It was just like, yeah, okay, tell us what's going on. All right, you're in a lot of pain. You're killing a plague guy. What's going on?
Yeah. Now they're going to revolutionize the study of plague guys with her like five sentences. This is so the Nature paper is going to be like titled "Satan is actually greed," says lady.
I guess if it was just like, you know, some evil dictatorship was just performing weird experiments on people to see if they could get anything, like, I could accept that. But like, clearly they were trying to make the psychiatrist like at least somewhat relatable.
Okay, check this shit out. These experiments are being performed by Hitler, early days after the Nazi takeover, but before the Holocaust, so it's not too distasteful, right? And the point is, Hitler is trying to make contact with Satan so he can do a deal with him.
Oh, there we go.
That is believable.
Hangs together.
That probably happened, honestly.
Right, I was going to say that ties in with a lot of like Nazi Nazi occultism.
Nazi stuff.
Except they would have been trying to make contact with Wotan or something.
Right. Yeah. Or, you know.
Yeah. Or Rasputin and the whatever the fuck those things from Hellboy were called. The 3-1.
Yeah, it's the Golden Army.
No, the first, never mind.
Oh, the dude who winds the clock in his chest?
Yes, they're trying to make contact with the dude who winds the clock in his chest. And I thought was the coolest fucking dude when I was in high school. I loved that guy. He's just
You're like, hey, a guy who's made out of a clock and bleeds sand.
And is a Nazi. This guy is... Although, I guess I didn't really pay attention to the Nazi part. I more just thought it was... Yes.
Oh, he's evil.
He was fighting for the fucking Nazis, I think.
I could definitely see high school Lawrence wanting to replace his blood with sand. In fact, I'm pretty sure he did try to do that.
Yeah. Look, I was eating sand, yes, but it was unrelated. And I don't care to discuss it in this format. One day, history will vindicate me when my higher than average silica content protects me from the EMPs. And you're all fools for not doing it.
Wait, anyways, we're already protected from EMPs.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
No, I'm not.
That's what they want you to
except
think.
For Ronald.
But I'm EMP shielded, so we're good.
Ronald's running out of 50 megabyte hard drives.
Ronald spends all of his time in one of those fucking, what should I call it, things that, never mind, I don't know enough. What, Ronald is constantly grounded. Constantly. Anyways, okay.
Oh, you're thinking of a Faraday cage.
Yeah, yeah. But I was trying to get at it by remembering that one movie where the aliens come down, they see electromagnetism, so only the Faraday cage protects you. And it was such a long walk to try to work through my memory of that movie.
Trying to get back to them. Just gave up.
What movie was it?
Darkest Night, I think. I remember it because it stars Olivia Thirlby, who I think is very pretty.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, let's... go to a game then. Ronald has one prepared.
All right, we got a game. We can do maybe just one or two rounds of this.
Okay.
So so not everyone has to go, but this is an interesting game. I'm calling it Sitcom versus the Menace. Okay.
Okay.
Now, whoever wants to go, I'm going to randomly choose a TV sitcom character and a very powerful menace that's either trying to destroy them or the world. And you, the player, have to come up with a scenario in which the sitcom character can save themselves in the world.
Okay.
All right.
Whatever the scenario is.
I would like to go first to feel out this space.
Okay. So let me roll a die.
And the fact that I don't like sitcoms and don't watch them is going to only help me in this game, I feel. Because the most powerful mind is the mind that is blank.
That's right. Okay. You don't have any preconceived notions.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. So you got Michael Scott from The Office. And then let me get your minutes. 1, 2, 3. Okay, you got versus the T-1000 from Terminator.
Okay, the T-1000 being the liquid metal one portrayed by Robert Patrick.
That is correct.
Yep.
Okay, now this one is hard because Michael Scott's greatest asset in a situation like this, whether he realizes it or not, is the intense discomfort he causes those around him. And the T-1000 is emotionless, so that will not work. So instead, it's a menace. The T-1000 is... Okay, how's this? The T-1000 is, for somewhat complicated reasons, attempting to work its way up the hierarchy of corporate America to assassinate a CEO, of a Fortune 500 company who is aware, CEO of Cyberdyne Systems, who is aware of the Terminators and attempting to protect himself from them, but while simultaneously turning the company away from producing Terminators. And Michael Scott, in this scenario, this is after the series has ended, he is employed by Cyberdyne Systems. And so the T-1000 has gotten a job in his office and is attempting to, that guy couldn't possibly be a Terminator. I've known him for years, his way up the corporate hierarchy to finally kill the pesky man at the head. But of course, Michael Scott is an utterly incompetent manager, although a good salesman. And therefore, the T-1000 is going to spend the entirety of its time in the future or in the past until its battery expires, stuck as an assistant to the regional manager and backbiting the regional manager. Or at least assistant regional manager and work his way up. And you might ask, why doesn't he just kill him? Well, obviously, the head of the Cyberdyne Systems is very attuned to Terminator murder and will be alerted if the T-1000 simply stabs Michael Scott repeatedly. So instead, he's just going to be stuck in the Dwight role on The Office forever.
That checks out. That checks out.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And, all right. As he continues on, maybe he learns a little bit about being a human and the minor struggles that it takes to be at a low-level management position.
Yeah, and the dreary boredom, but also sort of fun you can have in an office, especially as the series progresses and it becomes less and less realistic. To the
point where it's a lot wackier.
Yeah, to the point where you can just like shoot a gun at the office and not get fired for some reason.
It is a big deal. But yeah, he doesn't get fired.
Yeah. Or that one where he literally gives Stanley a heart attack. And then when they try to do a training on how to do CPR, he for some reason rips the skin off the dummy and wears its face as a mask.
Yes.
Yeah. That was a great clip. I haven't seen any of the show, but that clip was hilarious.
And it's like, I mean, how good are his sales numbers that he's not just
going to justify giving this guy around?
Yeah. I feel that Dan is our guest should go.
Yeah. You want to try one, right, Dan?
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. You get Malcolm from Malcolm in the Middle.
Okay.
Versus Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men.
Oh my God, incredible.
Okay. Now, I must confess, I've not seen that movie. I am familiar with I recognize the character though.
If you know the character well enough, or do you want me to reroll your menace?
Give me another menace, yeah, because from the reaction that got, I would not want to just waste such a beautiful prop.
Sounds good. You get Voldemort from Harry Potter.
Now this I know.
Okay.
Right. So
Malcolm
of course,
from Malcolm in the Middle versus Voldemort.
Malcolm from Malcolm in the Middle versus Voldemort. Already, Malcolm has a huge advantage in that he is, of course, the only type of thing that can beat Voldemort, a weedy middle schooler. So already, let's see, Malcolm has, he's got kind of, he's kind of, girls think he's kind of cute, but he has like, he's a little awkward around him, just like old HP. I think we got a good thing going here. Now, of course, with Malcolm, his real strength lies in the power of family. He is, of course, in the middle of a whole team of psychos. And that's going to come in really handy when you're defeating Voldemort, because more than anything, what you need to defeat Voldemort is the power of friendship. Smashing the crystals. God. Okay. Okay. Here's how he does it. So Voldemort is, of course, he's a resuscitated snake man ish thing, but presumably he still needs like home goods. So Voldemort, finds himself in the store that Lois works at, Malcolm's mom. And she's, of course, a force of nature. I think what I'm going to go with, actually, Malcolm's going to go get his mom. and she will just give that guy the tongue lashing of his life and make him wish he had never been born just from how much he's disappointing that woman. And he will slink away shamefacedly and go drown himself in that that little tub full of poisony water that Dumbledore had to drink.
You know, I'm going to just say everything else. I'm very impressed by how many characters from Malcolm in the Middle Dan knew.
I named exactly two, but thank you for
that's one more than I can name, and I can only name Malcolm because you know he's in the title.
Well, you also have Middle. There's yeah. Malcolm and Middle. That's the two.
There are two others. If there is a character named Middle on that show,
there's a character named Middle. That's his friend in the wheelchair, I think.
Wait,
that's
really
Middle. No.
I was going to note that Malcolm in the Middle, parentheses, the middle is a hot chick, would be the name of the Malcolm in the Middle porn parody.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
And then there'd be another parenthesis that's like, also Malcolm is overage, so this is okay.
Romo, do you want to give this one a shot?
Yeah, hit me.
All right. You get Jerry Seinfeld versus Godzilla.
Oh, classic matchup.
All right. So Seinfeld's in New York. He's doing his thing. Suddenly there's like a rumbling out in Manhattan Island and a giant, you're not sure what it is, starts destroying the city. Seinfeld has no idea what to do. So he flies to California. This whole time, Godzilla's just tearing up New York and Godzilla starts making his way across the country. And you later discover through a series of flashbacks that Seinfeld actually made Godzilla in a terrible accident. Anyway, so he's still not sure what to do, Seinfeld, so he goes to a comedy club, does his thing. He's trying to get his mind wrapped around this situation, and he finds that going to comedy clubs really gets the juices flowing. So what he does is he starts testing jokes. He just makes funnier and funnier jokes, and you know, soon people are just dying left and right from this joke. It's not good enough yet, right? He needs to be able to kill Godzilla. So he's just testing and testing, and you know, he's like flying to Asia, circuits in London, you know, the biggest cities all over the world. And next thing you know, he's in Australia because the entire world's been killed by both him and Godzilla.
Wasn't the prop that he had to in some way save people?
No, anyway. There's a final duel at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. They somehow text each other and figure it out. They're like, we're going to meet here, yo. And Godzilla's like, yo, it's on, bro. I don't know what he's talking
about. He sounds so excited.
Anyway, so yeah, Seinfeld dives down there and he gets to like about 20 or 30 feet and then he expires from the cold exposure of the ocean.
Wait, that soon?
I don't think you listened to what was supposed to happen.
Godzilla is the ruler of this destroyed world.
Before you criticize,
I think anyone could construct a scenario in which Godzilla wins the fight.
I love this because Rahul has correctly identified that Jerry Seinfeld is the real monster.
Godzilla was the hero.
Raul, in your scenario, what percentage of the Earth was killed by Godzilla and what percentage by Jerry Seinfeld?
Yeah, only a fraction was killed by Godzilla, actually. It was mostly
Seinfeld. It's mostly Jerry.
Because he had the power of, like, the internet, right? He could post his jokes on Instagram.
He had the chaos joke.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, what is the deal with mass murder and why do I keep committing it?
It's the sheer power of the marriage ref unleashed.
That was
you guys. Did I make a reference? You guys didn't get the.
I fucking got it, Dan.
That was Jerry Seinfeld's triumphant return to television
after the twin triumphs of Seinfeld and B movie. He's like, I got to get back on TV, and Dan, tell us what happened.
Yeah, so the concept was a kind of a reality slash like. A talk show slash game show, I guess, called The Marriage Ref, where couples would come on with their fun marital disagreements. And Jerry Seinfeld, noted marriage and family therapist, I guess. Jerry Seinfeld would adjudicate and rule in favor of one party or the other.
And he'd just make it funny?
I guess he would try. The idea, but no.
I believe Judge Judy for like marital.
He was Judge Judy for leaving the toilet seat up.
And I believe that the actual referee, as opposed to the judge or sort of the bailiff, was also played by Alec Baldwin on this for some reason.
Oh God, I forgot about that. Another marriage expert, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great husband and a better father. What more can you?
Look, he can't help it if his children are selfish pigs, okay? Like, sometimes you just get a kid with bad vibes.
Yeah.
You really tickled Lawrence on that one.
I got him.
It was like the two-parter laugh. You know it's really good, right? Like,
yeah.
I would like to say that I was laughing because it was so horrible, but what he said to his daughter was truly monstrous, and
it is really awful.
What did he say?
He left this really horrible voicemail where it wasn't even about anything bad. It was just like she hadn't picked up her phone for a while, so he called her a selfish pig and all this other horrible stuff.
This was when like she was like 13 or 14 at the time.
Yeah,
this really, really totally obscene.
Yeah, nonsensical.
Anyways,
and then someone died on his set.
Yeah,
so right. Good guy, good guy.
And it's ambiguous whether it was his fault or not. We'll find out later, I guess, or never, because he's got enough money that we just won't realistically. Anyways, right. Ronald, do you want to try one?
I came up with a game.
Okay,
we'll play it again some other time.
And this is too good not to do again. This is our new beat the gin for a while. I think.
Wait, okay. I feel like I could choose two good ones. Shit, I don't know any sitcoms. I only know villains.
Let's move to recommendations because I gotta go in a minute.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, and why don't you do recommendation and caution first? That way you can just drop off if you need to.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah. Okay, I've got two recommendations. I have no cautions this week. My first recommendation actually comes from Lawrence. It's a television show called The Life and Times of Tim.
Yes.
I started it like a week and a half ago and finished it within like 4 days. Really hilarious stuff. Easily worth checking out. Really, it's like kind of this like, it's always this really good setup of like Tim kind of being dragged into these really stupid scenarios. It's partially his own fault. Sometimes he tries to resist, but it seems like fate just kind of has something in mind for him, and he falls into these huge traps, and sometimes the lie, a small lie, turns into this really horrible thing that happens to him, or sometimes it just like he doesn't even really do anything wrong, it just like gets totally screwed over. But it's just a really hilarious show, so easily worth checking out. The second recommendation I have is for a video game that just released called Multiverses. It's in open beta right now. It's free to play. It's very, very fun. It's like a WB Games Universe Smash Bros.
Oh, cool.
And you can do fun stuff like Velma from Scooby-Doo versus Superman. really hilarious matchups. Tom and Jerry, Bugs Bunny, like Shaggy. And it's got a really weird roster, which I really love. And it just has a great sense of humor. And it's just a fun game. So definitely check that out if that sounds interesting to you. And those are my recommendations.
Awesome. And I'm glad that I finally Tim-pilled someone. I've been talking about that show for years and everyone ignores me because it's not well known and very hard to explain.
No, it's because it's coming from you. Now that Ronald said it, I'm going to definitely watch it.
Trust me.
Dan, would you like to go next?
Yeah, sure. So let's see, for a recommendation, I, in the course of my daily rounds on social media today, I was put in mind of a really gripping novel that I read by the author Sherry S. Tepper, who is a science fiction fantasy author who was most active in the late 80s and into the 90s. She started her career pretty late, so she didn't really have a very long period of output. She passed away in the mid-2000s. Oh. But she is absolutely one of my favorites, a true craftswoman of just really intense imagery and that really haunt you and stick with you. So I will recommend that everyone read Grass by Sherry S. Tepper. It's her 1989 novel that was nominated for a Hugo Award and lost. And typically I would be foaming at the mouth that such a great work would lose, but it lost to Hyperion by Dan Simmons. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one.
Yeah,
but that is an all-timer.
Kind of considering having that be a podcast somewhere down the line. Maybe we'll invite you back if you want.
I would love to be a part of that. So that kind of takes the edge off. Like if you're losing to Hyperion, you know, that's all right. But yeah, check out Grass by Sherry Tepper. It is haunting. It has a number of chilling themes and really vividly drawn imagery and set pieces and concepts that really haunt you. Really, really cool stuff. Very affecting.
Sweet.
And I would, as a caution, I'm going to say, stay away from extra cheese Domino's pizza. I ate some for free because it was left over from a program at the library. So I kind of scavenged on it. And let me tell you, when they add extra cheese to that, like the ratios are all off. Uh-huh. It's just not worth it. It's just gross. So don't do it.
Okay. Well, I won't. Because it's never good.
Thanks for taking that bullet for us.
I was going to say, I take this bullet for y'all. So,
Rahul, would you like to?
Okay, so weirdly, Hyperion's been making the rounds because I just finished the quadrilogy. On Lawrence's recommendation, I read The Terror as well.
Great week for Lawrence recommending shit.
I would like to recommend that. Fantastic. Scary. Yeah, it was just good all around. Just awesome. Just so good.
All right.
And do you have a caution?
No.
Okay. And now it's my turn. I have two recommendations, no caution. The first one is a novel called Last Days by Adam Neville. I previously recommended The Reddening and Cunning Folk by Adam Neville. I don't think that this one is quite as good as those. It's the story of a documentarian who gets hired to investigate a cult and gradually comes to realize that the cult actually was wielding actual supernatural power, and that the supernatural power is still a threat. It takes a while to get going, and the first third of it, it's kind of just cycling through the same effects over and over, and then the ending it's not a bad ending exactly, but it doesn't belong in the book at all. The rest of the book has been like this fairly carefully cultivated, like building of atmosphere and horror on top of horror. And then in the ending, they're just like, fuck it, let's go get guns and shoot some shit. And it doesn't really work, but it's still pretty good for checking out. And then the other thing is the Guild, which is Albuquerque's local art house cinema, has been having their annual film noir festival. And I've been trying to see every movie in it. And being reminded that I don't actually really like 30s and 40s movies all that much because the pacing tends to be pretty slow. But I did see one I quite liked. This is the film Crime Wave, starring Sterling Hayden, who you may remember as General Jack the Ripper from fucking Dr. Strangelove. 1953. This is the story of a man who has been to jail and has just gotten out and made a life for himself as an airplane mechanic. And then some of his old buddies from jail bust out and they go by his house and they're like, no, I know you say you don't want to do crimes, but we really want you to do crimes. You're going to do crimes with us. You say you don't want to do crimes. Fine. We're going to kidnap your fucking wife and make you do some fucking crimes. And meanwhile, Sterling Hayden is playing the biggest asshole detective you can imagine. Who's like, no, that dude's still fucking doing crimes. I'm going to prove it. And just constantly setting weird traps for the guy for no reason, even though he has no real proof that the guy's doing crimes. And I really enjoyed just how much of a prick Sterling Hayden is. And, it has Charles Bronson, and I think his first film role is just a weird, heavy guy with a strange face that kind of makes me think he might have gotten plastic surgery.
I'm not like a Bronson.
Not a Bronson head?
I'm not a Bronson head, but I didn't know this guy made it to like movies.
You didn't think Charles Bronson started movies?
Wait, that's like what he was in. I thought we were talking about Bronson, the UK's criminal.
No.
Okay, my bad.
Different guy.
The guy that guy named himself after.
Oh. Yeah, because he's in Death Wish.
Well, you know, I only know one, all right?
And it's the one that was played by Thomas Hardy. Anyways, plugs. Dan, you go first, because you got some actual shit.
Yeah. So, well, as always, I can say that now, having guested on the show a few times. Check out The Cannonball, presented by myself and my esteemed colleague and actual literature professor, Claude Myron Guzer, and our quest to read through the great works of the Western canon as identified by noted crank Harold Bloom. Throughout the course of it, of course, we wrestle with Mr. Bloom's ideas and where we part with him, but mostly it's about having a great time with the classics. It's a fantastic journey of a dunderhead like me learning about the finer things in culture and having a really great time and learning about just how weird and neat all the classics really are. So please check that out. Let's see what, and also as always, check out your local library. A lot of cool stuff going on down there. You'll love it.
Raul, do you have a joke plug?
I don't have a joke plug, but I have a plug.
Okay. A plug that might be a joke.
It's not a joke. I like to plug the loneliest man in the world. He's a man, an indigenous man living in the Brazilian Amazon. His entire tribe was murdered 22-ish years ago, and now he's the last one.
What would you like us to do? I guess
I want you to go there and be his friend.
Lawrence, you lazy dick.
Okay, and I actually have a plug as well. So I recently made the astonishing discovery that if you go to your local animal shelter's website and fill out some forms and maybe go through some training, they will let you walk the dogs. And they won't even charge you money. They'll just be like, here, go walk our dogs. So do that.
Oh, nice. Because
dogs are good animals to be around, and you can help them out, and you could be the on one of these, like on my training, I was the high point of like 6 different dogs days. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's very sweet.
Yeah. And anyways, from all of us at Bad Time Radio, don't worship Satan. It's bad for you. Good night, all.
If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna get